We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
How's it going, everybody? The Bronx Pinstripe Show, number 23. We have made it halfway through the season. We are at the All-Star break, so no Yankees baseball tonight. We are recording on a Monday. Tonight is the Home Run Derby, but Scott, how's it going?
It's going well. I'm very excited and happy to where we are. Happy about where we are for the Yankees season at the All-Star break. It's definitely we're in position to really take this down the home stretch, and I think we're in a better position I think than a lot of people really expected. So I'm a happy man. I'm a happy person going into this All-Star break.
And I think you're extra happy because your guy Ref Snyder had a nice little weekend.
Not only did he get called up to the major leagues and take over second base for 180 Steven Drew, but he earned his pinstripes in the first series against the Red Sox. I mean, he had his moment. Granted, it was a little bit of a, you know, it was some insurance runs, but they were
big.
They're at the end of the game. They were the runs that actually we needed to win the game. But I mean, Ref Snyder comes in, gets his first base hit and his first home run in the same game, gets just off to a torrid start, and it was awesome, man. He smoked that ball over the monster, and just seeing that youthful exuberance coming from second base gets me pumped up.
I'm sure we'll talk about Ref Snyder quite a bit this episode in a little
no
bit.
No doubt.
But you had a good week early in the week too. You went to Hank's Yanks. How was that?
Yeah, so we went to Hank's Yanks. It was Rich Kaufman and we went, and it was awesome. Actually, it was a really good time. We gave away two other tickets as well for people to go to the cocktail hour and the dinner. We did that on Facebook, and so I know everybody had a lot of fun. And I'll tell you, the golf event and the dinner and the cocktail hour was run just beautifully. I mean, the guys who ran it. Big shout out to those guys, Red, who Mike Walsh, who is the guy who ran it, did a terrific job. And they had, you know, a silent auction. They had a dinner. They did a whole bunch of different things to fundraise for Hank's Yanks and some other great charities. But I'll tell you, as a, you know, coming into it from, like, if you're a fan and you walked into this, it was so much fun because all these guys were so accessible. I mean, you're pretty much just hanging out in a cocktail hour setting, right? And you're able to go up and talk to whoever you want.
So who are some of the highlights that you got to talk to?
So I'll tell you, one of my favorite guys talking to was Pat Kelly. Pat Kelly he's here like half the year, but he's coaching in Australia right now. And he's also a scout with the Dodgers on the Pacific Rim. But he's just a lot of fun to talk to. We were talking about, I don't know if anybody saw this, but I tweeted out on Bronx Pinstripes a few weeks ago, a picture of the 96 Yankees going to David Letterman. And the caption or what Pat was saying was that the one thing that the Letterman guys told him or told the entire team not to do was to touch Letterman's hair. They're like, don't touch his hair. Just don't touch his hair. And I had to get to the bottom of this story. And and Pat was telling it for, I don't know, I was talking to him for like 15, 20 minutes about it. And so the picture is the pretty much the 96 Yankees just popping champagne and spraying the living hell out of David Letterman on the set. So if you haven't seen it, go check out our media feed on Twitter. It's an awesome picture. But yeah, he was a blast to talk to. David Cone was a blast to talk to. He was there, like, really nice guys. Who else was there?
So you got a little video from Boomer?
Got a little video from Boomer. Boomer Wells was exactly the way I'd expect him to be. Just a real loose dude who was, you know, funny and just really, really approachable. Very nice to talk to. Hank Steinbrenner was there. I got a couple minutes with the boss, which was cool.
Give him a piece of your mind.
I did. I gave him a little bit of piece of my mind. I was talking to him. I actually spoke to him about the fans and how getting fans more involved with some of the aspects of the Yankees and during the games and things like that. So I think that's an area that I think they could improve on a little bit. And so yeah, he listened to me, gave him my card, and he said he'd call me. So I'm waiting by the phone, holding my breath.
Yeah,
but
probably gonna be waiting a while.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, it was a lot of fun. It really was. Everybody there was really cool, and you know, we had a great time. And I know, and A-Rod was there. We didn't get to meet him. He kind of had a swarm around him. But, you know, he was there for, I'd say, about an hour plus, and was great with all the kids, signing autographs and talking with the kids. And, you know, so he was very good. And I know Rich's goal was to get a picture with A-Rod.
Well, he technically did.
He did. I know. If you look at it, it's hilarious. There's a picture. There's like a pro picture of A-Rod signing autographs for kids that was taken by, like, you know, Getty Photos, someone who put it on Getty Photos. And A-Rod used it as a picture on his Twitter, and I think on his Facebook page. And there you see A-Rod and all these kids, and in the background is Rich Kaufman with his phone up taking a picture of A-Rod. So, yeah, he's in a picture with him.
Yeah, and then over the weekend, Rich was at Fenway for the Saturday game, and he just late after the game just tweets out a picture of A-Rod, like, 2 feet from him. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? So yeah, I tweet him. I'm like, where the hell are you? He's like, I was just leaving the bathroom, and out walks A-Rod. I was like, all right, you sure you're not stalking him, man? Cause
yeah,
that's a little weird.
That's twice in a week, Rich. We need to watch out for you.
I don't know if A-Rod has a restraining order yet against him, but it's probably not a bad idea.
Yeah, he's like personal paparazzi.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny. But yeah, overall, the tournament and the dinner, we actually just went for the cocktail hour and the dinner, and it was a lot of fun. But other guys that were there that we met, Jim Leyritz, Cecil Fielder, so Brian Boehringer. It was a lot of fun.
Nice. A lot of 90s guys there. A lot of guys from the 90s team, which I'm sure a lot of the people who are listening, and I know myself, I mean, those are the guys I grew up with. So that sounds awesome.
Yeah, it was. It was like my childhood in front of me. It was pretty cool.
Yeah. So tonight, as I mentioned, is the Home Run Derby, and tomorrow's the All-Star game. You know, I don't know, what are your feelings about the All-Star break and Home Run Derby in general?
You know, I've always loved the All-Star break and the Derby. Just, I mean, from going back to when I was a kid, you know, during the summers, we used to go down when I was a kid in like elementary and middle school. We used to go down to Vero Beach, Florida. We have family down there, and my mom worked in the school system, so we would go down for, you know, a few weeks. And like, the All-Star game was always a big deal to me because, you know, I'd always get my friends from Vero, or the people that were down there that I knew, and we'd all always just have like a big thing for the All-Star game. It was always a big deal. I mean, just like remembering like the Bo Jackson home run, and there's just some really great moments, I think, in the baseball All-Star game. I think it's the best All-Star game in all the professional sports.
Yeah, so. I definitely agree it's the best, but I think it's because it can be played the most normal.
Right.
You know, pitchers are still trying to get hitters out, and hitters are still trying to get hits. Where in like the NBA All-Star game, there's no defense. Hockey, right, there's no defense. There's no hitting. And football might as well just be flag football. I think it would actually be more exciting if they just played flag football than in pads. So I definitely agree that the baseball All-Star game is the best. However, it should not count for home field advantage. I think we are all in agreement on that one.
Some people aren't. I mean, they put it in. Mr. Selig put it in, but I agree. It's an exhibition game, and I think it should be treated as such. You know, you have to have a level of competitiveness in this game, because you still have a guy throwing 95 miles an hour to another guy, and there's just a lot of dangers if you don't take that seriously. So, but at the same time, it's a lot of fun too. Like, there's always, you know, a good amount of like joking around. And I forget what it was. It was when Bonds hit a home run, like someone like tackled him in the field.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of great moments that I think it can still be played seriously and competitively, but also fun. You know, there's that moment when Randy Johnson was thrown at Kruk, and he was, you know, bailing 15 feet out of the box because he was scared.
Yep. That was awesome.
So there's moments like that I think are great, that the game should be about, and instead it's about, you know, who's going to have home field advantage.
Yeah, the whole home field advantage thing just doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, nobody's earning that, you know. You should be earned during the season in this, you know, we play 162 games. Can you give these guys a benefit at the end for making the World Series and giving them home field advantage if they have the best record? You know, it's crazy why they put it on an exhibition game. So I hope they change that.
It was always about pride for these guys, American Leaguers versus National Leaguers. I mean, there's, you know, you hear about how, oh, the AL won, you know, for 10 straight years, and the NL had a run, and then the AL came back in the 90s. So, I mean, I think that's what it should be about. And the Home Run Derby, I think, has totally jumped the shark for me. I know they're switching it up this year. They've got the bracket, and they've got 5-minute time style, which, who knows, maybe it'll be exciting, and hopefully it'll go quicker, because I think the last few years it's been about 3 hours long, which of hearing Chris Berman just go back for straight hours is nauseating. But I don't know.
But what about Josh Hamilton at Yankee Stadium? I mean,
sure.
The Derby sets people up for moments like that as well.
But those are few and far between in the Home Run Derby, especially since the game is not what it used to be about 10, 15 years ago.
No, I'll give you that. I enjoy watching the Derby. I think it's fun to watch. But yeah, it's long. It's very long. The one thing I always remembered was when I was a kid too. I don't even remember what channel these were on, but I don't even know how I watched these. But I don't know if you ever saw those old school Home Run Derbies.
Yep.
With like, you know, it would be like Mickey Mantle and whoever, and they go and they interview a guy that the stadium is empty. And they're just going up there and so smoking balls.
That was Wrigley Field in Los Angeles is where they did those. And they used to be on Saturday morning. I think those were filmed in the off season. And it was just the two guys with an announcer, no one in the stadium, just taking BP, trying to hit home runs.
It was cool just because you get to know the guys too. And that was kind of like a turn back the clock. So they were on Saturday mornings. I don't even remember when they were on. I just remember seeing them when I was a kid.
Yeah.
They should definitely replay those. Someone needs to get a hold of that footage and put them back on because I would love to watch those.
Yeah. Yeah. It was black and white footage. It was pretty cool.
Yeah. It was pretty cool.
So, All-Star game, Yankees, who were voted to the All-Star team, Betances got his second selection, Teixeira his third selection, which I was actually surprised it was only his third, but then you look at his baseball reference page and realize that he had three straight seasons of bouncing around from team to team.
Right.
So, you know, he got traded a couple times, so he didn't really make it in those years, even though he had good years. And Gardy, he was in the final vote, but he replaced Alex Gordon, who's down with a groin injury. So good for Gardner, Teixeira, and Betances. All three guys definitely deserve it. I think A-Rod, though, you can make a case he got snubbed to not even be on the final vote or anything like that.
I guess so. I just don't see them putting him on with all the controversy that's been surrounding him. And I definitely don't see the fans voting him in. I mean, I don't know.
I feel like he could have won that final vote because people, I think, want to see the
polarizing figure in the All-Star game.
Exactly.
Yeah, maybe.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't think Major League Baseball was going to put themselves in that situation. But then you turn around and you see that that I can't think of his name right now. The Milwaukee Brewers.
Braun.
Ryan Braun gets put on. And nobody bats an eye about it. So, you know, there's a huge double standard. Obviously, we've talked about this, and everybody in New York knows about this because we're kind of in the spotlight on this, on what they're doing and what they've done with A-Rod. But I don't think he was. I mean, was he snubbed based on the numbers? Sure, look at the numbers. He deserves to be in the game. But you know, I didn't expect him to be on the team.
Yeah. I mean, he was also snubbed based on the fact that, like you said, the numbers, but also, his career numbers are better than most anybody's, and he is one of the most polarizing figures in the league, and he'll attract eyeballs to the game. So I really think MLB missed a chance there to have A-Rod on the All-Star team. I think it would have been very entertaining.
It would have been entertaining. I wonder how Manfred, you know, kind of approach that if he was in on that decision.
Yeah. So some news over the week, as I'm sure everyone knows, Ellsbury and Miller returned from the DL on Wednesday, which is good. Sort of got some mid-season acquisitions there, if you think about it that way. The Yankees are expecting Beltran to be back sometime after the break. And then Chase Headley had a little bit of a calf injury that held him out 3 games this week. So that was, you know, they sort of just had to weather the ship for a couple of days with him.
Yeah, and Headley's just been that steady guy at third. I think he's really come into his own. You know, he's not going to hit for a huge average But he's steady over there. He's going to hit 250, 260. He's probably going to hit, you know, 20 home runs, 15 to 20 home runs. And he plays good defense. I mean, I think early on, we talked about this last week, so I don't want to beat a dead horse. But, you know, his defense, I think, has gotten back to what we expected him to be. And he's just like that solid guy at third base. So I'm glad he's on the team. And I'm glad that calf injury was not more significant.
And the big news over the weekend was that Ref Snyder got called up. And I think we have a little audio from Sunday's game after he hit that home run.
Rob, your first home run comes in a win against the Red Sox at Fenway Park over the Green Monster. How cool is that?
Very cool. You know, something you can only, you know, dream of. So, you know, those runs, you know, we definitely need them because, you know, the Red Sox made a little run right there. But, you know, it's a very special moment. You know, he left a slider out over the plate, and I knew it. You know, when I hit, I got it pretty good. So, you know, special moment. My family's here, so it's, you know, something I'm sure will cherish for, you know, the rest of my life. After the first game, like I said, after that double play and my first at bat, I kind of felt normal. I felt like the tempo was where I wanted to be. So, you know, it's nice getting a win, going to All-Star break. I know a lot of the veterans and a lot of us are going to enjoy our time off. It's going to be fun watching some of the guys in the All-Star game. You know, well deserved. So it's you know, a good time to be a Yankee, and it's a really cool time in my life for sure.
So I'm mad at myself for missing that home run. I was sweating my ass off golfing yesterday. It was about 95 degrees, and I'm trying to follow on my phone, and I see that Ref Snyder not only got his first hit, but his first home run at Fenway against the Red Sox, and I didn't see it.
I saw it. Yeah. It was amazing. It was awesome. We've been testing out Periscope a little bit. I don't know if anybody's seen it on the Twitter feed, but I was actually on Periscope Live hanging out with some people, and he hit the home run. So I went a little crazy about it. I've been waiting for this kid to make his debut for a very long time. Seems like we've been talking about it every single episode. And he does it, and, you know, in grand fashion. It was an awesome – he crushed the ball. I mean, it was a no-doubter. And for it to just go over the monster the way it did, and he was pumped up, man. And the Yankees did not give him the silent treatment. They were just all pumped up, ready to go. I think they like seeing a young kid, you know, up in the lineup making a difference.
Oh, definitely. I mean, you can see what a young player can do for a team. I mean, obviously on the field he hit the home run, but also for the clubhouse. I mean, it energizes some of these guys. And to have a guy come up through your minor league system that you drafted.
Yep.
I mean, it's good for the team, I think. It can really be a catalyst. And
well, and the fan base loves that. I mean, yep. there's nothing Yankee fans love more than their own homegrown guys who turn into superstars or turn into good players. I mean, those are the guys that we love and you know, just relish the most, absolutely.
So Friday night, it's Friday night during the game or just after the Friday night game, Jack Curry tweeted that he was hearing that Ref Snyder was going to be called up for Saturday's game, and it definitely surprised me. I mean, I didn't expect it. Did you?
Well, expecting it, I guess, is a different. I don't know if I expected it. I've been expecting it all year.
But
the timing is very strange.
It came out of nowhere.
Yeah, the timing is strange. It's like finally Joe Girardi looked at the batting average of Steven Drew, and he's like, oh my God, he's still under 200. He's like, we got to get this kid up who's hitting four. He was hitting over 400 in the last month, I think, in AAA.
Yeah, well, it's not a Girardi call. It's a Cashman call.
I mean, I have to believe that Girardi has influence on that call. I mean, there's no doubt about it. He manages the roster on the field. He's got to have a say in that, no doubt. So the fact that Girardi kept sticking with Steven Drew, you know, there was definitely it had to be an influence. The timing is weird to me.
Yeah.
Just before the All-Star break, that's the only thing that I'll say about that. But
also at Fenway, I mean, the kid played well over the weekend, so
he did.
Clearly he can handle some pressure, but usually you don't like to call a guy up who you're thinking is going to be a top prospect and hopefully going to be a big part of your team for a long time. You usually don't call him up in a pressure situation like that. You usually try and get him up either on the road, you know, in like Houston or Kansas City or something, or at home where his home crowd is going to be behind him.
Well, the only thing I could say is that I really hope that he's up to stay.
Yeah.
Because
that was my next question.
Yeah. The deal is, I mean, we just got to wait, I guess.
Yeah, so there's been rumors that the Yankees just called him up because they're showcasing him for the trade deadline.
Right.
Which makes me so angry. And
I mean, because we don't need second base help, because that's not a flaw in our team. I mean, it's not like one of the biggest flaws. Why would we need second base help? Now, it makes no sense to me that we have a kid who we've been waiting for and grooming, and who has been producing throughout the minor leagues. And then one of the biggest glaring holes that we need on this team is at that position. So it makes no sense to me to trade him. It really doesn't.
Well, unless they're trading him for a guy like Zobrist or something.
Again, makes no sense. That makes zero sense. to me, that makes absolutely no sense. Why am I going to trade a kid who has all the potential in the world for a guy that we kind of know who he is?
Yeah. And
I'm not doing that trade at all.
And the thing that doesn't make sense for me is that, you know, Ref Snyder has been crushing it in the minor leagues. He is one of their top prospects. I think he's becoming well-known around baseball as a, you know, maybe not top, you know, 10 prospect, but definitely a very good prospect that is, you know, at least well-known throughout baseball. Bringing him up can only hurt his value, because if he hits, great, he still has value on the trade market. And if he doesn't hit, then what? A team's going to be like, no, we don't want him anymore. He went, you know, 1-for-15 in the major leagues in his first 15 at-bats. It's like, what's the win there? I don't get that.
So that's why I don't believe this. I think these rumors are exactly that. I think it's just people talking in the wind. Because, one, that's one of the biggest holes on our team is second base. And we have a top prospect coming up who is – I mean, if you watch him play – and I know people were talking about his defensive deficiencies, but from what I understand, and we're going to have one of the Scranton beat writers on as a special episode coming up too. We're going to find out even more about Ref Snyder and someone who's seen him every day. But the fact that he played right field and he's coming in and you know, this transition to second base, he's been improving and improving and improving. Really, to me, is something that's very good and should be talked about, because he's a raw athlete. If you're watching him play in Boston, you can tell his athleticism. I mean, the kid can move like anybody in the major leagues. He's an athlete.
Yeah, I mean, he's still learning the second base position, and if he can provide offensive help like we saw yesterday, then I think if he can just play an average second base, then that's a huge, huge benefit for this team.
No doubt about it. Keep him up, man. I truly believe, I think they brought him up to start, and he's going to stay to start.
I think that's why
they brought him up.
I hope so. I mean, he could really, really be an exciting aspect of this team in the second half. And a team that's in first place right now by 3.5 games, you bring in, you just get Ellsbury and Miller back, and you bring in a guy like Ref Snyder, who's some young blood, onto this team in a position of need, as you've been saying. I mean, that's three guys right there that I think could be huge in the second half.
No doubt about it. And just another point, I just thought about this, but the Yankees are very well known for having a worldwide brand, right? And buying into the Japanese market. Well, not only is Ref Snyder a top prospect in a position that we need, but he's also Korean-born that could really spark a lot of interest in another country for the Yankees. I mean, look what Jeremy Lin did for the Knicks at that time. I mean, honestly, that's another aspect, a marketing aspect for the Yankees, which we know that they're great at and they're always looking at. That could be another aspect of why this guy is even more value, you know, for the team itself.
Yeah, I mean, it's a totally valid point. Didn't really think about it that way, but yeah, absolutely, definitely a good point there. So let's get into some of the games over the last week. They're 4-2 over the last week since we last did a podcast. And as I just said, they're 3.5 games up on Tampa. And they have the fourth best record in the AL. They're currently 8 games over .500 going into the All-Star break. Which, if you sort of asked me, I want to say 2 weeks ago, when they were hovering around .500, I mean, couldn't have really asked for anything better.
No, I think the streaky play has almost... has really kind of leveled off, right? We've been winning a lot more games lately.
Won the last three series.
Yep, and they've really knocked up their consistency, and I think we're getting we're hitting the ball a lot better. You can see, if you look at our box now and the averages within the team, you're seeing a lot higher averages over the past month, I think, than we saw early in the season, where people seemed like half the team was at 240, 230. But we're seeing a lot more. I mean, Arai's hitting for average. Ellsbury hasn't been playing, but he's been hitting for average. Gardner obviously has been just on a torrid June and into July. I mean, he's kept it up. So, and then McCann has really turned it up as well. McCann's been an extra base hit machine lately, with big hits too. So I think the offense has really picked it up.
So Tuesday versus Oakland, first game of that series, they lost 4-3 in 10 innings. And the thing that I want to mention from this game is that the Yankees are now 2-5 in extra inning games and 12-12 in one run games, which is kind of surprising because their bullpen has been so good, especially Betances and Miller. Back into the bullpen, they've also had guys like Shreve and Wilson emerge. So to be 500 in one run games and to have a losing record in extra innings is kind of weird to me.
Yeah, it is a strange stat. You know, I think maybe early in the season when our bullpen, besides guys not named Betances and Miller, were struggling, you know, you could see that a lot more. But lately, the bullpen's just been so good. I mean, everybody has been pretty good. I mean, we've had a couple blemishes with Betances and some other guys that have been a little shaky. But consistently and across the board, I think they've been a lot better. So I agree that stat's it's a strange-looking stat.
Yeah, and there were in that game against Oakland, they left 7 men on base and were 3-for-11 with runners in scoring position. So they shot themselves in the foot. Could have won that game in 9 innings easily, but instead they went to extras. Betances, in a second inning of work, gives up the home run to lose the game. And sort of, like we've been saying, one of those games for Betances where he just leaves a pitch in the middle of the plate.
Yeah, it's going to happen from time to time. I think it's happened twice in the past 2 weeks?
Yeah.
But again, like I said last week, I'm not worried about it.
No, me neither. All right, Wednesday they got the win 5-4 against Oakland. CC had a very CC-like performance. 5 1/3 innings, 7 hits, 2 earned runs. Ton of guys on base, sort of working out of trouble. So the good thing is it was only 2 runs. The bad thing is he only pitched 5 1/3 innings, and the bullpen, again, was left out to dry.
I mean, CC's he's our fifth starter, basically.
Right.
So if he gets the 5 innings, I'm happy. Two runs, 5 innings, you know, pitches into the sixth. It's almost a quality start there. Good job, CC.
This was the game that they pushed him back 3 days to give him a little extra rest, and I also think they did it so he would only have one more start before the All-Star break. So now he's going to have about a week off after, or a week and a half off after that last start. He needs to come back and really show something in his first few starts after the All-Star break. I'm not saying he's going to go out there and pitch 8 shutout innings, but he needs to start getting into the sixth inning, or through the sixth inning, sorry. He needs to start giving them a little bit more length, or else you can't keep him in the rotation and have a guy every fifth day go out there and only give you 5 innings. It's going to tax the bullpen way too much.
Well, I think a couple things on that. One, I don't think he's going anywhere. I think he's gonna be in the rotation for the rest of the season unless there's an injury. He drain his knee. He had his knee drained as well over the past when they extended that start. He's obviously having some issues with that balky knee as well still. So that could be something we look at, you know, and see if these struggles continue, they may shut him down based on that knee. And then, you know, I think the way that our bullpen sets up right now, with we have a couple long guys with Warren out there, I think Girardi is playing this bullpen game now with expectations of, you know, he's got a couple guys that are not going to give him long starts. And well, I think that's what he's playing into.
Is Warren a long guy or a short guy?
I think he's a long guy.
But he was used as a long guy last week in
right.
against Oakland, and then he was used as a short guy twice over the weekend against the Red Sox. So what's going on?
I don't know, because usually long guys are you see long guys in mop up duty or if
right.
you know
he's too good to be a long guy.
I agree with that, but he's a guy that gives you some length. He's just not conditioned right now to throw just 1-2 innings. It seems like, or his head's not there yet. You know, he's been starting all year, so I don't know. I don't know how that mentality changes with like a drop of the hat or you snap your fingers and then all of a sudden you're a 1-2 inning guy. I don't, you know, I've never been in that situation, obviously. So I don't know what the mentality is there and how easy that transition is. So, you know, maybe they're easing him into that situation. Maybe the All-Star break can help him with that transition phase. I don't know. You know, I don't know. What do you think about that?
So, I mean, I love Warren's stuff out of the bullpen, but I think Girardi needs to start using him in clean innings because we saw him come in against the Red Sox twice with guys on base and struggle. We'll get into it in a second. One of those wasn't really his fault, but then yesterday, Sunday, kind of didn't pitch that great. But I think he needs to come in a clean inning. Because he has the starter mentality from earlier in the season. If he comes in with a clean seventh or something like that, I think he can be fine for this team as a one-inning guy. But I don't like him coming in with first and second and one out or something like that. I rather see a guy like Shreve or Wilson or Betances come in that situation.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense as far as the mentality aspect, I think. You know, starting off with a clean inning is like starting. So, you know, everything that happens behind him is on him at that point. So... yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Another thing, a note from the Wednesday game is that Teixeira was just unreal, back to his 2009 form, which we've seen pretty much all year. He hit two home runs and had two unbelievable web gem plays in the field. So I just wanted to mention that because Teixeira made the All-Star team, and I really do think that he has been one of the three most important players on the team.
Dare I say X-Factor?
Yeah, I mean, definitely X-Factor, as I said earlier in the season, that he could be the X-Factor. But he really has been.
No, you're right. He has. He's been tremendous. And, you know, I would love to see a stat on how many runs he's saved with his glove, because he's made some phenomenal plays this year in the field as well. And you just can't say enough about this guy. He's completely regained his dominant form, and I did not see this coming at all.
And I got into an argument with somebody on Twitter like a week ago he was complaining about Teixeira's batting average. And I'm like, are you out of your freaking mind? Look at every other one of his stats. I don't care if he's hitting 240. He's leading the league in RBIs. He's got an unbelievable OPS, and he's hitting home runs, and he's picking everything at first. I don't care about his 240 batting average.
No, I don't care about it at all either. And he had it up. He actually had it up to like 260, I think, at some point too. So, you know, it's fluctuating a little bit. But that, as long as those power numbers there and the production numbers there, and he's still doing what he's doing in the field, who gives a shit about what his batting average is? Yeah, it doesn't matter.
What you're really talking about there is, okay, so the shift is taking away a few singles to right field.
Right.
Whatever. It's not a big deal.
I agree.
All right, Thursday, the Yankees won the series versus Oakland with a 6-2 win. This was a day game, and the best part of this game was that Tanaka was unbelievable, and it was good because he came into that game and he had struggled in his last four starts, but he went 7 2/3 innings. He threw 114 pitches. Girardi said after the game that they definitely pushed Tanaka a little bit because they needed some rest for the bullpen because they just had a couple of short starts. Previously, he was throwing the ball really well. He only gave up hits in the second inning, which was when he gave up the two runs, but he was perfect pretty much after that. And also that it was his last start before the All-Star break, so he was going to have a little extra rest there. So really, really good start from Tanaka.
Yeah, we needed to see a good outing from him. And, you know, getting into the eighth inning, 114 pitches. I was surprised that Girardi actually stretched him out that far. I'm not surprised in a bad way. I'm glad he did it because I think he's, you know, capable of it, obviously. And I think that it was good to see just from our, you know, the fans' eyes to see that he's throwing that many pitches and going that deep into a game. But yeah, he needed a bounce back start, and he was dominant. He was Tanaka. I mean, like you said, that one inning where he gave up a couple hits, but he was unhittable from then on.
And during that game, it was also announced that Gardner would replace Alex Gordon in the All-Star game. And we already mentioned this, but really happy for Gardner.
Oh, well-deserved. I mean, so well-deserved. He's been such a catalyst and really an MVP on this team. I'd say him and Teixeira have really been two of the MVPs on this team. And Gardner's just, you know, he's a leader. He's a catalyst at the top of the lineup. He plays... a gold glove left field. He can fill in everywhere else in the field as well, in the outfield. And, you know, he's just one of those guys who you root for. You walk on at College of Charleston. It's a great story.
Absolutely. And that led into the big weekend series against Boston. It was probably one of the most I was looking forward to this series against the Red Sox more than I have in the last few years with the teams who have not really been that great over the last few years. And if one team was good, the other team seemed to be struggling. So this was sort of the first series in a while where both teams were not only close in the standings, but also playing well going in.
Well, yeah, and Boston was kind of riding a hot streak too and really climbing the AL East. I mean, they're still in the cellar, but they're, I think when we,
it was 5.5 games going into the weekend.
Then it got to 4.5.
Yeah. And if you're looking at, you know, I live in Boston, as many people know. This is what everyone was saying, you know, on sports radio in Boston, that if the Red Sox take 2 out of 3 from the Yankees, they're right back in it. And they're riding high going into the All-Star break. So right. The Yankees definitely needed to go in and put their foot down. And they won 2 out of 3, and that's exactly what you could have asked for.
No doubt about it. I think 3.5 and 5.5 is a huge difference, especially when you have 4 teams in front of you at 5.5 games, you know, after you lose 2 of 3 from the AL East leading Yankees and your biggest division rival. So, yes, it was kind of a definitely putting their foot down and showing them that – we mean business, baby.
So Friday, the Yankees got the win 5-1. I was at this game. It was, I'm sad to say, the first Yankees game I've been to this year, which is just insane when you think about it, considering how much I watch this team. but I'm going to be going to a few games coming up in the next few weeks, which is good. But anyway, it was Pineda versus Buchholz. Probably on paper, the best pitching matchup going into the weekend. Pineda definitely stepped his game up, and Buchholz did not. Left with an injury. But Pineda, 6 2/3, 7 hits, 1 earned run. And again, we've been talking about this for a while. His K-to-walk ratio was great. 6 strikeouts, no walks. So he didn't beat himself.
No, he looked dominant. I mean, Pineda looks, when he's on, he's filthy. We've talked about this before. That K-to-walk ratio is so important because, you know, he really controls the game. And when he's on, he's got some of the best stuff in the major league. So it was good to see him really win that. Buchholz backs out. I think he was crying a little bit about some injury. I don't know what was going on, but you know,
elbow.
He's probably gonna be on the shelf.
Elbow strain or something like that.
Yeah, something you expect. You know, he's gonna be on the shelf probably, which is a good thing for us because he was pitching very well
and he
was
awesome
really helping
June.
Out that team.
He had a really dominant June, so this was a big game to come in, and it's not like they racked him around or anything, but they did, you know, score a few runs off of him. A-Rod set the tone with a moon ball in the first inning before really anyone could sit down with their hot dog and beer. A-Rod was rounding the bases to shut the Red Sox fans up, which was nice. And the Yanks had a 3-run fourth inning, pretty much the fact that Buchholz left the game and a huge error by Brock Holt, who I just want to mention is the only all-star from the Red Sox, sort of was the difference in the game.
I love the fact that they're booing A-Rod relentlessly as he hits that home run. He trots around the bases, steps on home plate, and then runs up to one of the fans in the front row and gives his gloves, his batting gloves.
To a
kid.
Was so that like, kid a Yankee fan?
I don't know. I didn't see it. I'd like to say he's not because it sounds better, but he probably was. And we'll talk about this, but he did it again the next night. You know, he did the exact same thing. So, you know, they're booing him relentlessly. And what does he do is he trots around the bags and steps on home plate and then gives his gloves to a fan. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah. And that's one of those things that I think that A-Rod probably wouldn't have done 2 years ago or his whole career. You know what I mean?
It just speaks to the way he's conducted himself this whole season. I mean, the guy has been a freaking angel everywhere. I mean, he's done everything correct. Everything well. I don't know who's giving him advice or, you know, if he's doing this, he's finally listening to his own inner self, his inner monologue, inner dialogue.
No.
I don't know what's going on with him, but he's doing everything right now. So.
It took him 39 years to get it, but he finally gets it.
Yeah.
So
good for him.
It's good. I'm happy for him.
Me too.
All right. So I want to question something. So the situation in the seventh inning was there was a guy on second base. And it keep in mind, at this point, it was 4-1 Yankees. And Pineda had 86 pitches, and Mookie Betts is up. So it's righty on righty. And Girardi takes out Pineda and brings in Wilson, who's a lefty, to face the righty Betts. I just don't understand that move.
Well, I think the bigger head scratcher is why you take Pineda out. I mean, Wilson has been good against righties and lefties, and I think he's brought him in situations that aren't as heavy on the matchup. But yeah, I don't really understand why you're taking Pineda out at that time. 86 pitches, pitching really well. I would keep him in to pitch, especially against the right-handed Mookie Betts.
Yeah, let him finish the inning. I mean, worst case scenario, he gives up a two-run bomb and it's 4-3. It's still the game. You're still winning. And I don't think he was going to give up a two-run bomb because he was pitching well all day.
But Girardi's done this all season where, someone has two outs, can clearly, from when you're watching the game, you have confidence that this person's going to get out of an inning. And then he comes out and he's even done it in like 5-run games in the 9th inning. I mean, this is just something that Girardi does. You know, he has something that he goes by. It's in the binder and he's going to do it.
It's frustrating sometimes. One other thing I want to mention from this game that you're going to enjoy is that, okay, so Miller's closing the game out in the 9th inning. He's a lefty. Pablo Sandoval comes up, who is a switch hitter, and he bats lefty off Miller because I think he has just totally given up hitting righty.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Let's compare those numbers again, Panda and Chase Headley, because I think it's my favorite thing to look at this year.
So as long as Panda's not hitting off of Eovaldi, I think he's not that great.
Yeah, I'm good with it, man. I love what Panda's doing up there. I think he's doing a great job in Boston. I think he should keep it up.
So I just thought that was interesting, the fact that in the first year of a contract, you brought in a guy who's a switch hitter who you were hoping was going to just pepper the monster, from the right-hand side, is just done hitting righty. So
I think he's good. He holds his phone and then actually likes Instagram pictures with his right hand too. So he's gone everything. Yeah. He's got everything righty.
Yeah. So enjoy that contract, Boston. That'll be a good one.
I'm sure the Dodgers will come in and swoop out of nowhere and save them again.
All right. Saturday, the Yankees dropped one to Boston 5-3. This game sort of could have gone either way, I thought. Nova pitched well. He gave up 4 earned runs, but I'm putting the 4 earned runs in quotes because I don't think those should have been earned runs. What I'm referring to is that in the 7th inning, Warren comes in to relieve Nova. There's two outs, and it's Mookie Betts is up, and there's a guy on first base. At this point of the game, it's 3-1. 3-1. And Warren gives up a deep fly ball to Mookie Betts to right field, and Chris Young is zigging and zagging to the ball. I don't know what kind of route he took, and he totally just misplays the ball, tries to backpedal to catch it, can't catch it. It's a triple for Mookie Betts, and the Red Sox extend their lead.
Yeah, he completely misplayed the ball. I mean, he was playing really shallow. I mean, I don't really understand why he was playing so shallow, but that really, I don't think, should have taken into to play for the route of the ball, because he got turned around a couple times and just completely missed. The ball just ate him up, and it was definitely a costly misplay.
And Chris Young has been good in the field all year, so I don't know.
He's been good. Yeah, he's been good. There's been a few things. There's another one that happened on Sunday that was strange to me involving Chris Young. But, he's been solid out there. I mean, it was just, I think, a weird play. I just think he misread the ball. I think that's
all,
it.
All the bottom line is he has to catch that ball.
And he should catch the ball. There's no doubt that ball is definitely catchable.
Yeah. And that was the difference in the game, because that would have preserved, should have still been 3-1, and the Yankees ended up scoring 3 runs in that game. So they would have tied it up, assuming Warren, was fine the rest of the game. But it's just sort of, it would totally gave momentum to the Red Sox. And it's really a game I thought the Yankees could have won, despite, if it weren't for that Chris Young play. But
yeah. What are you going to do? That's baseball. Sometimes you just misplay balls. You know what I mean?
Thanks, John Sterling.
That's baseball, folks.
Well, Susan. All right. Yanks won the series, though, 8-6 on Sunday. This was an interesting game. Obviously, as I mentioned, I missed the whole game, but I was following on my phone, and then I watched the highlights, including Ref Snyder's home run about 400 times since last night. But Eovaldi, five innings, but somehow has 9 wins on the season. I can't explain it.
Yeah, so you look at his stuff, you look at Eovaldi's stuff, and then you see the 9 wins. You're like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. But yeah, he's been up and down, and the biggest thing, we keep beating this to death as well, but he's just not getting the length. You know, he's giving up too many hits, and, you know, Andrew and I were talking about this before we started recording, but I mean, to me, when I'm looking at these hits, it's just strange. It's like they're single, single, single. He's not getting really hit hard, but he's all over the plate and missing spots, and that's going to lead to you know, the bat finding the ball more oftentimes than not. So
yeah, I mean, his pitchers are leaking out into the middle of the plate. His fastball, while it is good at 98 miles an hour, it's usually in the middle of the plate. And yeah, I mean, yeah, they're not doubles to the gap, but guys are getting the bat on the ball, and when you're in the strike zone, in the middle of the strike zone that much, you're going to give up a lot of hits. So I think he really needs to work on getting his stuff in better locations, or else he's going to continue to only go 5 innings.
Yeah, and I don't know how you teach that. I mean, that's, if you can either throw the ball where you want it or you can't. You know what I mean? It's like at this point in his life,
well, it's just, it's mechanics, though, right? It's mechanics he needs to work on. I think that the pitching coach and the team should be able to help him with that.
Yeah, well, he has 9 wins, so I think he's getting a lot of run support. That's definitely something. Yeah,
he's
happening.
9-2, but he hasn't pitched like 9-2.
He's got what, four ERA, 4.5 ERA,
yeah,
something along those lines. But he's giving up the hits to innings. I think the last, when he was in the middle of that game, I think at one point, the numbers are probably a little different now, but it was like 96 innings with like 112 or 117 hits, something crazy. So he's giving up a lot of hits, too many hits, and that's just going to lead to problems. So yes, hopefully he can clean it up. But up until right now, you know, we're living with it, and it's going okay, so I'm not going to complain too much.
Well, here's the thing that I'm worried about, is that if you have Eovaldi and Sabathia in the rotation only going 5 innings, that's twice a week that your bullpen is having to go 4 innings.
Yeah, no, you're right. We need more depth from these guys. There's no doubt. We need depth. I mean, you know, what you want from your 4 and 5 starters is you want a quality start, and you want them to get deep in the game. That's pretty much, you want them to eat some innings, so that they can you know, get deep into a game, and the bullpen doesn't have to completely relieve them every single time. But you know, they're 4 and 5 starters for a reason. At the same time, you can't expect them to pitch like a 1 or 2. So the fact that he is coming in to the All-Star break with 9 wins is pretty sweet.
All right, Yanks bats came alive in the 6th inning. A-Rod, Chris Young, and Headley all had RBI doubles, and that's sort of, they finally came alive all in one inning, which was good. Sort of extended their lead, and then Red Sox came back again, though, so it was sort of a seesaw of a game.
Well, yeah, and the one thing I was talking about Chris Young beforehand is, this was in the 9th inning, I guess, or I think it was the 9th inning, but there was a play. There was a ball to right field that Chris Young, like, double clutched. Hanley Ramirez was coming around to score.
I think it was earlier in the game.
It may have been earlier in the game, but it was Hanley Ramirez was coming around to score, and like Chris Young just like kind of double clutched and then kind of lollipopped it to Tex, and then Tex double clutched, and there was still a bang bang play. I mean, it was still a play that was close. And if Chris Young pulls back and throws that ball home, I think Hanley Ramirez is out by 5 feet. But it was just a head scratcher. Like, why didn't you throw the ball? So I didn't really understand that. So that was kind of two weird plays by Chris Young in this series in right field.
Yeah, no, neither of those plays are errors, but it's plays that should be.
They don't show up in the box score, but you know, if you're watching the game, they're definitely stand out for sure.
Yep. And the Yankees defense was a little shaky. McCann also made an error in the 9th inning that sort of got the game close. You know, you're thinking Ref Snyder's insurance runs, you know, great. It's a 4-run game. Don't even worry about it. Miller, though, has looked a little shaky since coming back from the disabled list, which I guess you can expect. He needs to shake off some rust. But, I mean, his defense didn't help him in the 9th inning. And the Red Sox lead the league in unearned runs scored. So they've been lucky a lot this year. And they actually lead by a lot. I think the stats are like, they've scored like 59 unearned runs this year, and the next team has only scored like 35 or something like that.
So that just leads me to believe is they're gonna just fall off the standings.
Yeah,
the second
I mean
that luck is gonna go away.
Yeah, I agree. They're not a good team.
No, I agree. And then, you know, in this game, obviously the one of the biggest highlights of this game was Mr. Ref Snyder coming in, getting his first hit, and then delivering a two-run shot in the ninth that was that ended up being the deciding runs in the game. So good for Ref Snyder getting those in Boston right before the All-Star break. And I wanted to mention something, actually, that we played that quote earlier in the show. But one thing I heard that I didn't catch the first time was Ref Snyder talking about the All-Star break and yeah, how everybody's going to kind of relish those days off. And he said, quote, "It was a lot of veterans and a lot of us are going to have, you know, a good extended break," which is kind of interesting, right? Because I feel like these guys in AAA right now are taking that approach. They're like, look, we're good enough and we're going to get to the show and show them that we are the next youth movement in the New York Yankees. I feel like they're taking that mentality and really embracing it. Just by that quote, you can kind of tell it's like a little bit of a separation. You know what I mean?
I mean, I definitely liked the way he conducted himself in that post-game interview. And, you know, you saw, like you said, you saw the guys really congratulating him, you know, giving him high fives, really embracing him in the dugout. I think he could only be positive for this team the longer he stays on the team. So I really just hope... Please don't trade him, Cashman. Please don't trade him.
Yeah, seriously. Do not trade this man. He's got nothing but upside. Nothing but upside.
Yeah. All right. So it was a good way to go on the All-Star break. You got a nice extended break here, and then you come back with 3 versus Seattle. Hopefully we can show it to shove it down Robbie Cano's throat over the weekend at Yankee Stadium next weekend and keep the train moving.
Let's do it, baby. Rob, I want Ref Snyder to have a ridiculous series in that.
I know,
against
right?
them too. Yeah.
All right, so I think we got some Instagram questions, right?
Yeah, we did a mailbag this time. We kind of put it on Instagram, and we'll start doing this more often too. So if you follow us on Instagram, or if you don't, go over there and check us out. But we'll put up a picture once a week that basically has something, you know, asking for mailbag questions. And rather than emailing us, you can also just put them right on Instagram. And we'll get to him from there. So yeah, we let's kick a couple off. I think the first one is from at Joey Kagan. He said, "How do you think the Yankees can improve in the second half of the season in their push for the playoffs? Also, do you think A-Bomb can keep up his production as well as Teixeira?" So Joey, thanks for the question.
So for this question, let's not talk about trades because we're going to get into that in a second. So just about who's on the roster now. Or who's in the system now? How can the Yankees improve in the second half for their playoffs?
Well,
what do you think?
Well, the aforementioned Mr. Rob Ref Snyder, we're not talking about trade, so we're not going to talk about trading him. He is going to be on the team. He's going to be the starting second baseman. He's going to improve the bottom of the lineup dramatically, I think, by getting on base more often and then really setting up Ellsbury and Gardner a lot better than they have been. So I think that is a huge improvement. And then obviously getting the guys back healthy in the bullpen.
Yeah, I guess to mention one other area that you didn't, I think that CeCe and Eovaldi need to, at least one of them needs to start going longer in games. It would be great if they both could, but at least one of them needs to extend their outings every time out to really give the bullpen a rest, really. That's the biggest aspect. Second part of that question, do you think A-Rod and Teixeira can keep up this production? They better, or else this team is not winning the division. And I think as long as they stay healthy, they'll continue to have good seasons.
And there's nothing to point in the direction that they're not going to keep it up. I mean, we haven't seen, knock on wood, any lingering injuries with either of these guys. I mean, they've been they've been completely healthy so far, and they've Teixeira looks like he's in great shape. A-Rod looks like he's really relishing this DH role, and they're not putting him in the field anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a DH.
Because you can't risk injury.
Right. And he's just too important to this team right now. I think they saw his level of production and how he was hitting the ball, and they're like, that's just not going to happen anymore. He's not going in the field. So, keep him off the field. That will be one. And then, stay healthy. I think they can keep it up. I mean, I didn't think they were going to produce to begin with. So I don't know why they can't produce after the All-Star break. Everything's going in the right direction. So
Teixeira already has as many home runs and RBIs as he did all of last season. And it's only the All-Star break.
It's crazy. It really is. It really is crazy looking at those numbers. So, yeah. I mean, hopefully they can keep it up. But honestly, looking at the two of them and their condition and, kind of all the elements that are going into it, it doesn't seem like there's nothing to say no, they won't.
Yeah, 1 through 5 in this lineup is fantastic.
Totally agree. It's only going to get, and the bottom's going to get better. And hopefully Beltran can come back. That's the other one, is that Beltran is going to be back. And hopefully this, you know, this little bit of an extension, extended rest for him will help. I don't know.
And I'm not really holding out hope for Beltran. I mean, yeah, he's going to come back and healthy, but I don't know how long he'll stay healthy, and I don't know if he'll produce. So, I mean,
it can't be much worse, to tell you the truth. Yeah, I mean, all he can do is help.
Do you remember how bad he was in the field?
He was real bad. He was real bad. But after seeing Chris Young for the past 2 days, maybe that's not so bad. No, but he was, you know, if he can regain a little bit of his offensive form, I think he'll live with some of the stuff in right field. He's still got a good arm. But, you know, he's definitely limited physically.
All right. Well, what's the next question?
So, Andrew, we call you Andrew Library.
We cannot pronounce your last name.
Yeah, sorry, man. We'll put your Instagram name in the write-up. But he asks also, do you guys feel the Yankees should make a trade for a top player like a Johnny Cueto or a Cole Hamels, or keep their prospects and maybe pull off a trade for a middle-of-the-pack bat? And this is going to lead us, I think, into our trade proposals that we're doing, right?
So, yeah. So, Scott texted me middle of the week, and he's like, I think we should do trade proposals on the next podcast, but not share them beforehand. So, we're going into this. I don't know what you're proposing. I don't know. You don't know what I'm proposing. Who knows? We could propose the same thing.
Could propose the same thing.
Or we could call each other morons. So, all right. Good question, Andrew. What's your first trade proposal? You know, how do you think the Yankees should approach this trade deadline? What's your first move?
Okay, so let's talk about, I guess we can lead this off with like general, you know, the theme of the way that the Yankees should conduct themselves in the trade deadline. I do not think the Yankees should be sellers in any of their top minor league prospects. That's my major underlying theme here. What that leads to is that we're not going to get a Johnny Cueto or a Cole Hamels in my book. What I do think the Yankees could use right now, I actually think that the Yankees offensively are in good position. I think we have good bench players. I think we have some guys in the minor leagues who are ready to contribute. So I really don't think that we need anybody on the offensive side of the ball.
Can I interject there for a minute?
Sure.
Who the hell is out there to really upgrade from a bat perspective? Teams are not giving away bats like right now.
You're right. There's not that many guys.
There's nobody out there in the trade market that could upgrade this team offensively in any way that I think could impact in the second half.
I agree. Unless someone is giving up someone major for big prospects. But yeah, I don't see anybody doing that.
Yeah, because there's so many teams in contention right now.
Yeah, exactly. The whole major leagues, if you look across the board, there are a ridiculous amount of teams that are still in contention.
75% of the league is still in the playoff hunt.
Yeah, so you got guys that that can help you, but there's nobody that's going to be a standout that can really just come in and I think put anybody over the top, especially for our team, because I think we have a pretty stacked offensive lineup right now. So what do I think is going to happen? You want both of them right now? I'll give you two of my two guys that I think we're going to target.
All right.
So what I think is that we can use some help in the back of the rotation. And I could see them going after two specific guys. One, the Cincinnati Reds, Mike Leake. I think Mike Leake is a perfect guy. He's 27 years old, right-handed pitcher who could come in and really help the back of the rotation. He's not gonna dazzle you, but he is going to eat some innings. He's going to produce some quality starts, and I think he could really help the team. And I don't think it's going to take a lot to get him. I think cash considerations and probably some low-level prospects would do the trick for a guy like Mike Leake.
Yeah, and he's a free agent at the end of the year. So,
exactly.
You know, if you're Cincinnati, who are sellers right now, you know, I don't think they're going to – who knows if they want to re-sign him? I don't know. But, yeah, they could definitely probably part ways with him for a mid-level prospect, like you said.
So Cincinnati's an interesting – team to look at because they are sellers and they do have some assets. And you know, this is not my second proposal, but I want to talk about it real quick. The another bat that I think could make a positive effect in the lineup is a guy like Brandon Phillips. But Brandon Phillips has a giant contract that nobody wants to take on. So the Reds are going to look to dump Phillips. And I think in that Cueto deal, whoever gets Cueto, I think that could be a part of it, is that the Reds want them to take on the contract.
Yeah, and we already have our future second baseman.
And we already have our future second baseman. And so therefore, I don't see this happening. So that I think we could go for, you know, their a guy like Mike Leake for Cincinnati, and I'd be happy with that.
All right, yeah, that's not bad.
The other guy that I think we could target, who also has a contract up at the end of the season, is a little older, 32 years old, but is a quality starter and has done very well this year, and is a left-handed starting pitcher who could really shut down some left-handed bats at Yankee Stadium, is Scott Kazmir. Scott Kazmir with the Oakland A's, who I think the A's will be also selling off some of their assets, especially a guy who has their contract up at the end of the year, could be gotten for, I think he had a two-year, $22 million deal, something around that range.
It's up at the end of this year. I mean, they're definitely going to trade him.
So he's a guy that I think the Yankees could really target that could help in the back of the rotation as well, that I think could be very effective in Yankee Stadium, and is a guy that I don't think is going to take too much to get him as well.
So that was one of mine, actually. That was the starter I wanted to acquire. Mm-hmm. But I actually think you're underselling him. I think he's better than a back end of the rotation guy.
No, I'll agree with that. Like, I'd say middle of the rotation. You're right. I'd say he's like a three.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I would even say he's a number two, but...
not on the Yankees.
Yeah, okay. We're splitting hairs at this point, but yes I think Scott Kazmir, definitely. So I'll change up my second proposal. But okay, yeah, I definitely like those two moves. Definitely a position of need. But then you're talking about, you know, who's coming out of the rotation if they make a trade for one of these guys.
Yeah, this is the quandary that I don't have an answer to. Joe Girardi hopefully does. But I still think that they're not comfortable with that rotation right now. I can't believe that they're not comfortable. They're comfortable with what's happening. So I don't know what they'll do, but I think that's what they'll target. The thing about Kazmir is he's going to take a little bit more of a prospect.
Yeah.
To get him, and maybe one of our, you know, I don't think they're getting rid of Severino, Judge, or Ref Snyder. I don't see those guys getting moved. The two guys that I could see being moved are Bird and Sanchez, guys that have you know, some prospect status and that could really be appealing to another team. I could see one of those two guys, if not both of those guys, getting moved.
And that's what Billy Beane's going to be looking for, is young offensive help.
Right.
I could see that.
And that would be something, you know, I would really consider.
Yep. Yeah, no, I totally agree. Because you could also look into re-signing Kazmir after the season. I don't think he's going to demand like some crazy 5-year contract. So
not with his injury history, he's not going to. And you know, the fact that Gary Sanchez and Bird, while they're nice young players, and you know, I think a lot of Yankee fans hope to see them in the Bronx someday, there is some depth in both of those positions. I think McCann will eventually go to be a first baseman towards the end of that contract. So I think the Yankees will move him to first base at some point. I mean, he's already been taking reps at first base occasionally as well. So I don't think we're in dire need of a first baseman. And then catching, you know, we have some depth.
All right. So you ready for my trade proposals?
Yeah, let's do it. I want to hear it.
My first guy that I think the Yankees should go after is Tyler Clippard. Who's currently with Oakland, who we've talked about. I think we just want to make trades with Oakland because we know Billy Beane is just always ready to make trades. But he's signed to a 1-year contract. Oakland's probably out of it. He's currently their closer. But I think he could really bolster the back end of the Yankees bullpen. And if you add in a guy like Clippard, that shortens the game to like 6 innings. And with the way the rotation is, that's what the Yankees need. So I really think the Yankees could get Clippard for not that much. You know, we're talking about like a mid-level prospect at that point. I don't know exactly who it is, but I know you're definitely not giving up one of the top guys that we've already mentioned.
Yeah, no, I like that move. I think another right-hander that's pretty steady in the pen, who has closing experience, would be definitely a good asset for this team down the stretch. And you know, he's pitched in Yankee Stadium before, which is a good thing.
Yep.
So yeah, I think that's a good guy to target.
Yeah, as you mentioned, he came up with the Yankees in 2007 and then went to Washington and had a really good career in Washington. Sort of moved to the bullpen, and he's with Oakland now, having another good year. So I think that could be a real plus for the Yankees, who's not going to really break the bank.
If my memory serves me, it was Jonathan Albadejo, who was traded for Tyler Clippard to the Nationals.
Oh God, I have no clue.
Yeah, it was a dynamite trade.
All right, so since you took my Scott Kazmir trade proposal, I'm going to switch it up. And I know you mentioned you don't think the Yankees are going to go after a big name like Cueto or Hamels, but if they do, I think they should go after Cole Hamels, because he's signed through 2018, so he's not a rental. if you're going to give up a top prospect, a grade A prospect, then I want it to be for a guy that not only is going to, you know, put you over the top this season, but also help you down the stretch, and I think, or down the road. And I think Cole Hamels could do that. Now, I don't know if the Phillies are going to be selling because they've got some management issues going on. But if the Yankees are going to go after a top guy like Hamels or Cueto or Samardzija, I would prefer it to be Cole Hamels strictly for his contract.
The problem with Cole Hamels is that I think they're going to be asking for more than one top prospect. I mean, I think they're looking for – I think early rumors, this was even in the offseason and into last year, but they were looking at Severino and Judge. Like, that, those are the two guys that they were looking at. And I'm not giving that up for Cole Hamels. I'm sorry. I don't want to do it. I don't want to cut off our farm system for an arm that, you know, we've seen just so many injuries with starting pitching. I don't think I'd want to do that. And with Severino, with the potential, I think that he's the scouts see him as a number two in the majors. You know, to me, that's a guy that I want on the Yankees.
Yeah, I mean, it would probably take Severino and another guy. I don't think it would take Severino and Judge. I think you could do it for like a guy like Severino and Lindgren, or Severino and Gary Sanchez, or something along those lines. Yeah, I mean, if you're going to go after a big name, you're going to have to give up big prospects.
And yeah, I know.
If you're trading pitching, or if you're getting pitching back, then I guess you can afford to give up a guy like Severino. I'm not even totally sold on it as I'm talking about it. But if it's going to be one of those big names, Hamels would be the guy I want.
I think right now you're playing with fire as Brian Cashman and some of the Yankees brass, because for a couple of reasons. One, I think the Yankees fans are really invested in these minor leaguers. Just the feeling, you know, just from listening to people and talking on Twitter and just talking to other Yankee fans, even in the stadium too, I feel like we're really invested in these, specifically these three guys, in Rev Snyder, in Severino, and in Judge. I really feel like the Yankee fans are excited about seeing these guys, and the fact that they've really been producing. I mean, Severino has been lights out since he's come to AAA. Lights out. And I think you're really playing with fire by trading some of these guys for a guy like Cole Hamels, who has had injury problems in the past, hasn't pitched in the AL East or in the American League, and we've seen people come over to the AL and not been what they were in the National League. There's just a lot of things that go into that leads me to believe that they're not going to do it.
Yeah, I mean, you're totally right about that. But I think if the Yankees are going to give up, or I think Yankee fans will be okay with giving up a top prospect if they can see the guy in pinstripes for the next few years, which Hamels would be.
No doubt. And, you know, we're going to have a lot more information on this too. Donnie Collins, who is a beat writer for Scranton Wilkes-Barre, is actually going to be joining us this week on a special episode. We're going to talk to him. He's been watching Scranton all season, and he could give us some real insight on, you know, what's going on down there, and really just, I think, some more just some eyes that have been on Judge and Severino. I mean, granted, they've only been up for a little bit, but he's seen Sanchez play and some of these other guys play. I think he's going to give some really good insight on those guys and kind of what we can expect at the major league level from some of these guys. So that'll be a fun episode, and we'll have that coming up as well.
Yeah, absolutely. He'll be able to tell us if he thinks the Yankees are going to be parting ways with these guys, or if he thinks they'll be in the Bronx for years to come. So as you mentioned, that episode will be coming up later this week, you know, maybe Wednesday or Thursday when we got some of these off days. So definitely keep an eye out for that. But in the meantime, enjoy the few days off from Yankees baseball. We're riding high in first place, and hopefully when we come back next week, we're talking about another series win versus Seattle. Talk to you guys next week.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes, and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it, and go Yankees.